You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Traveling in a fighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies, I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, once again, representing Australia during TPC's world tour, our march around the world, Drew Fraser is a former professor of law at Macquarie University in Sydney and author of The Wasp Question, amongst other titles, which we'll mention later in the program. But he's back to answer that year-round question we yearn to learn every year when he appears. How are our people faring down under? Drew, you know, I tell you, we've gotten off to a blistering start during March Around the World. We've been to Croatia, Canada twice, England, Brazil, now Australia, four continents tonight, in fact, alone. But you are the one I always marvel at because you are the one we're talking to in the future. You are, we're talking to you on Sunday afternoon as we broadcast live on Saturday night here in the States. So I don't know, maybe novel things marvel me, but nevertheless, I'm happy to have you with us. However we make it happen, it makes you glad you lived this long.
Yes, and it's a beautiful late summer day here up in the mountains behind Sydney. Couldn't ask.
It's summer in Sydney. I mean, you know, imagine that. So yeah. Everything is upside down and topsy-turvy down under. That's why they call it the land down under, and that's why we played that music. We always play it for Drew. He is a mainstay. He is one of the people who have appeared on each installment of March Around the World since we instituted it a few years back. And, well, we're all the better for it. So, Drew, glad to hear you are doing well on Sunday afternoon, your time, Saturday evening, our time, and glad to be connected with you live.
Likewise.
All right. So there are some things we need to talk about first. And actually, I'm going to do something that I don't know if we've done before, even after all of the appearances you've made on this program. We're going to dive a little bit deep into your past and into your background and some of the battles you fought and how you appointed yourself in those battles. And I think that'll make for interesting content. And we'll get to that a little bit later this, our third and final hour tonight. But first, let's go to, what's going on in Australia? What is the latest news from Australia? You emailed me some notes and some topics you wanted to address. Let's start there.
Oh, well, I mean, the most depressing thing is looking at another, 700,000 immigrants this year in the middle of a housing crisis where there's about close to a zero vacancy for rentals in cities like Sydney and Melbourne. So it's getting a bit crazy and worrying. If you've got children in particular who are old enough to be hoping to find a place to live, and that is hard enough, buying a house if you're a young family has become impossible.
Well, you know, we've seen that here, even in the South and even in the rural South over the course of the last 4 years, especially since the COVID era. There have just been an influx of people to the red states, as you might know it here in the U.S.
Yeah.
from California, New York, and all of these other places. I mean, certainly they're fleeing their governments, but unfortunately they're not always voting differently than they might have there. And they're certainly jacking up the price of real estate. The price of real estate in the South, where I live, the southern part of the United States, Dixie, has at least doubled since 2020. And in 4 years, I mean, it's made it impossible for a native-born Southerner to really afford housing here. And I guess you're saying it's the same way in your part of Australia.
Yeah, and I think comparatively speaking, housing is probably more expensive here.
No, I would certainly say that. Yeah, I mean, you know, even here, I mean, you could sell a fishing shack in Los Angeles for $1 million, buy a mansion in the South for $500,000, and have $500,000 in the bank. So, and that's what it's certainly what they're doing, and it's to the detriment of all of us. But you know, so how did the Aborigines live? How do they get by there in Australia?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question down here, because how do we define an Aboriginal in Australia is always, there was a radio guy down in Melbourne who got hounded by the Human Rights Commission because he referred to the exceedingly high number of fair-skinned Aboriginals here in Australia.
But I guess Australian Aborigines don't include the founding stock of Europeans who actually turned the place from, you know, a primordial state of being into a first world nation. I mean, they don't get any sort of privileges, do they?
Well, the Aboriginals don't get any. But I'd say they're a fairly privileged group of people.
I'm saying the founding stock of the European people who developed Australia and from that primordial state into a first world nation. There's no privileges there.
No, absolutely not. And our numbers are rapidly decreasing. The number of when I came to Australia back in 1975, the Anglo-Celtic or Anglo-Saxon population of Australia was about 75% of the total. It's now just slightly over 50%.
Wow.
So it's
wow. Real. Okay, so when you're talking about the Great Replacement, you're talking about Australia being more advanced even than the United States by that regard. I mean, you know, certainly you weren't starting out at near 100% as we might have been after, you know, colonization, but from 75% to just barely 50%, that's remarkable.
Yeah. And of the other 25% in 1975, at least probably between 15% and 20% would have been other white European, people of white European stock. And the Aboriginals would have been essentially the only significant non-white group in the country.
So who's making up the remainder now?
Well, large numbers of Chinese, especially in Sydney, large numbers of Indians, especially in Melbourne.
Chinese and Indians.
And then there are, you know, a large and growing refugee population of sub-Saharan Africans who, I tried to warn people 20 years ago that this was a bad idea, but right now we are going through an amazing black crime wave in every
Imagine
major
that.
City.
Yeah, well, I mean, I live in Memphis, Tennessee, so I could tell you, I could have told you that might have occurred here. But well, isn't that something? That is amazing that the demographic displacement of Australia is that advanced, even compared to Europe and America. I think that's remarkable. Yeah. So you're saying it's 50% white in Australia now?
Well, 50%. Anglo-Australian. I mean, as I say, there'd be another maybe 20% of Italians, Germans, you know, Croats. And
all right, so,
so
that puts it about on par, maybe a little bit better than America, but still not where, you know, you'd want a first world nation to be.
As bad as Canada either. I mean, Canada, where I came from, is is a horror show now. Toronto.
You came from Canada, but you're representing Australia on our march around the world because you've lived there since the 70s. So, I mean, so you've spent the bulk of your life in Australia.
Yep.
The majority. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So that's how Drew landed as our Australian representative TPC's march around the world. So anyway, we're coming up on our first break. We will talk to Drew about a couple of other contemporary issues afflicting Australia, and then we will get into his background, which even after all these years of having Drew on, and I don't know how many times we've had you on, Drew, more times than I can count at least, I don't know if we've gotten into your background to the extent and into the depth that we will tonight, but it's all to your credit and to your benefit, I assure you, as far as this audience is concerned, and that's all coming up as we continue. So we're going to take our first break of the evening. Drew Fraser, Professor Drew Fraser, representing Australia in TPC's March Around the World this year. Four guests, four different continents tonight. We were in Croatia and Canada last week. So many more places still to visit as this month continues.
Hey there, TPC family. This is James Edwards, your host of The Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something. You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net.
Attention collectors and savvy investors. We are excited to announce a momentous evolution in our journey. Introducing Free Water Coin Company, formerly known as Rust Coin and Gift. This rebranding takes us back to the very roots of where it all began, Free Water, Oregon. It's a tribute to the legacy of Al Rust and a celebration of three generations of dedication and excellence in the world of coins and precious gifts. Al, Brian, and Jake Rust, standing strong through 64 years of service. Discover a world of exceptional service at Freewater Coin Company, your premier destination for genuine, honest money and precious gifts. Under Brian's expert guidance, Freewater Coin Company, building on the legacy of Rust Coin and Gift, continues its tradition of trust and excellence. Visit us at our Provo, Utah location. Explore our treasures online at rustgoldandsilver.com or call us at 801-377-1574. Freewater Coin Company, where your future is built one honest coin at a time.
Buying bread from a man in Brussels. He was 6'4" and full of muscle. I said, "Do you speak my language?" He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, "I come from a land long ago. He does know and mention her.
I'm going to do something I've never done before on this program, even after all of these years. And I know better than to do this, but I'm going to do it because I know you will receive it, ladies and gentlemen, in the listening audience as his credit. If you read my Wikipedia article, the Wikipedia article on the political cesspool, you'll read all kinds of things. Anti-Semitic, neo-Nazi, racist, xenophobe, homophobe, you name it. It's all there. So when I read these things, I can translate them. I have a mind that works, and I know what they really mean by these things. And so when I'm reading the Wikipedia article for Andrew William Fraser, our guest here from Australia Live tonight, it reads that he is a Canadian-born academic and was an associate professor in the Department of Public Law at Macquarie University in Sydney, New South Wales, Australia. He holds a BA and an LLB from Queen's University, also a degree from Harvard University, and a degree from the University of North Carolina. It
goes on to say that he is notable for his opposition to non-white immigration and his support of white nationalist policies that will not run afoul to anybody tuned in tonight, such as the revival of the white Australian policy. Drew, I got to ask you, because we have Virginia Abernathy on this program, who also was educated at Harvard, Jared Taylor from Yale. What's it like for a guy like you to go to Harvard?
Well, this was back in 81, 82, and it was, I enjoyed the experience very much, and the libraries and Cambridge and Boston, it was a wonderful experience for me.
So it wasn't as oppressive then with regards to the diversity of opinion as it has become?
No, not nearly. In those days, I'd have to confess, I was sort of a recovering academic leftist, and I was interested in critical legal studies. And there were a little knot of people at Harvard Law School involved in critical legal studies. And I have to say, encountering them up close and personal, it sort of cured me permanently of my academic leftist tendencies. So it was a very therapeutic experience. You know?
Well, we've all benefited from that henceforth. So let's continue on. Two things you wanted to talk about with regards to current issues in Australia. And then in the last half of our final hour here, we're going to talk to you a little bit more about some of the battles you faced and how you appointed yourself in those battles. But let's talk about the failed voice referendum and the immigration Ponzi scheme that now serves as the foundation of what used to be called the economy and the big issues down here these days. You're talking about Australia. What are we talking about here, Drew?
Yeah. Well, I don't know whether you heard anything about the voice referendum over there, but it's part of what I call the cult of the other. You know, anybody but an white Anglo-Australian is really regarded as being of sort of elevated, almost religious significance, right? And the Aborigines fit into that character, into that slot. And the government had this idea that because there are so many Aboriginals out in the bush who are really doing it hard, partly because it's very hard for these people who are not the highest IQ people in the world to adapt to a modern sort of used to be industrial society. So they had this idea that they would create a body, a government body in Canada or in Canberra that would be entrenched in the Constitution and empowered to pass judgment, in effect, on any and all legislative proposals that would be sent to the Parliament. And this, in order to be entrenched in the Constitution, it had to be approved by a referendum. And that referendum to succeed would require majority support in a majority of states, that's 4 out of 6, and a majority of the population. And for all of the great and the good, you know, the academics, managerial, professional class, politicians, and so on, this was just simply a thing that could not be questioned by any normal, decent person. But as it turned out, it did not get majority support in a single state, and 60% of the people in the country as a whole rejected the proposition. And this was a major disaster for our Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, who hasn't really recovered, I don't think, from it. But that occupied the entire country for most of last year. And it was a silly idea. But that and most of the population here in Australia agreed with that view. But even though it didn't succeed, the various local and state governments are still trying to push it in their own jurisdictions, you know. So, and as I say, I mean, the people who would benefit from this proposal would be not the full-blooded Aboriginals out in the bush, but essentially the urban, fair-skinned, educated, pretty much assimilated into Australian life Aboriginals in the city. So it's another sort of scheme that benefits, you know, the educated middle class, essentially. But so it was a rare win for what you might call right-leaning people here in Australia.
We'll certainly take a win anyway and anyhow and any win we can get it. But let's now ask you one more thing, Drew, about contemporary issues in Australia before we pivot into the last half of our last hour. A little bit more about your personal background, some battles you fought. And these are interesting things we've never shared with you before on the program, folks. If you know Drew's history, you might know them. But it's a testament to his character. But let's talk about the state of affairs with the Australian Defence Force, the ADF, and with the other countries, they seem keen to go to war with Russia and or China. What's going on that front with that particular institution?
Again, I mean, the armed forces here are small. They have a quite distinguished history, you know, in the world wars and in Korea. But now they're small, and as with the American armed forces, the woke brigade is really infiltrating both the officer corps and the enlisted. So they're making every effort to diversify the recruiting base and so on. And so they're actually again.
Everybody in the army, but the people who are keen to fight, which is
exactly. That's exactly right. And I was just reading an extremely good article in a magazine called Quadrant here about the state of the officer corps in the army, in particular. Apparently, the education that officers receive has almost nothing to do with the military arts, if you like. I mean, the Defense Department has outsourced their what would you say, continuing and postgraduate education to civilian universities. And you know what universities are like these days. They're not exactly of hotbeds of the warrior spirit. So there's that. And, you know, it's become very careerist and so on. And in a situation where the Americans seem to be doing their best to provoke a war with China over Taiwan, and we're relatively close to the that theater of operations should it ever become active, it really is worrying, especially since there are over a million Chinese living here in Australia, you know, and they live cheek by jowl with each other.
A million?
Predominantly.
A million Chinese in Australia.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And about 700,000 to a million Indians and so on. And they're all, as I say, concentrated in the cities. And, you know, in World War II, as in the U.S., there weren't many Japanese down here at that time. But the ones who were here, and the Germans and the Italians, were all rounded up and put in a camp. You know,
how about that? How about, hey, listen, folks, I guarantee you, As interesting as the first half of this hour has been, the second half will be even more so. I've got some questions for Drew you don't want to miss. Stay tuned. We're Down Under with Drew Frazier when we continue.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Laura Winters. Three people have been killed after a National Guard helicopter crashes at our southern border. Two National Guard soldiers killed. One Border Patrol agent also died in the crash. Another soldier being treated in the hospital. Now, the chopper was in the vicinity conducting aviation operations near Rio Grande City in Texas. In Hawaii, AI technology is going to be used to prevent wildfires. Fire detection sensors are being installed to hopefully prevent what happened in Maui with that raging wildfire. Turning now to politics.
As if our democracy is on the line, because it is. We must reelect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
You're listening to First Lady Jill Biden as she warms up the crowd in Philadelphia ahead of the president's speech there Friday.
MAGA Republicans and Donald Trump want to pass a national ban on the right to choose, period. Well, take it seriously, folks, because that's what they're heading for.
Former President Trump taking to his social media platform, Truth Social, to weigh in on Biden's State of the Union address.
We had the safest border in the history of our country. As soon as he got in, Crooked Joe and his radical left lunatics deliberately dismantled each and every one of those policies that were so good.
It's been 10 years following the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. A U.S. technology firm and the Malaysian government are collaborating on a fresh underwater exploration for the wreckage. USA's John Schaefer has more.
Austin-based marine robotics company Ocean Infinity conducted extensive searches for the aircraft's remnants in 2018. Company officials are now aiming to retry the search utilizing advanced technology. I'm John Schaefer.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that is MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for health care can save many families up to $500 a month, and that is huge. But it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The member satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. MediShare works, too. It's been around for 30 years. Members have shared more than $5 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, really, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now. You'll get a price within 2 minutes. So see what you can save. This is a very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MericaFirst.com, AmericaFirst.com.
Hey friends, James Edwards here again to remind you that Antelope Hill Publishing is America's premier provider of dissident literature. They print books that mainstream publishers are too afraid to touch, providing you with information you need to challenge the status quo. Whether your interest includes contemporary dissident politics, history that would otherwise be censored or slandered, philosophy, or exciting and thought-provoking fiction,
You'll find plenty to love in the Antelope Hill catalog, which includes books such as Generation 68, The Elite Revolution and Its Legacy, about the elite-driven cultural revolution of the 1960s, which transformed America. Whitey on the Moon, about the demise of the space program due to diversity. The Sword of Christ, which argues for restoring Christianity as the foundation of the West and combating heresies like Christian Zionism. Speeches by Mussolini and other historical figures, and much more. With new titles added every month, there's no doubt that they have something for everyone. So check out their catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com. All right, folks, we're in the land down under with Drew Fraser here in Australia, joining us here from the future. It's Sunday afternoon in Drew's time. We're still here on Saturday night in the States. And Drew, I don't know if you heard early in the program when we were in England, Canada, and Brazil, respectively, but we are broadcasting from a remote location tonight. We're not in our normal studio in Memphis, and we're in East Tennessee tonight in Knoxville, meeting some incredible people, and they are listening attentively to your interview, and they were actually doing some research during the extended break there at the bottom of the hour. And according to their research, which is what I'm relying on here, that you were mentioning the number of Chinese in Sydney alone earlier. Yeah. But according to their research, there is only 750,000 Aborigines in Australia, but they get a disproportionate amount of attention from the government. Do those numbers follow with you, Drew, there in Australia?
Yeah, it'd be like that. The numbers are quite low. There are a lot of, as I say, of fair-skinned Aborigines. I mean, people of part Aboriginal descent. But yeah, I mean, there are the country is about what, 25 million all up. And the number of Aborigines is quite small, but they receive
very small, less than a million,
in the order of $40 billion in the federal budget.
Look at that. Can you imagine, folks listening, $40 billion of concessions towards this population of 750,000 people? Yeah. I understand, if I am, again, getting my research correct here, that the average IQ of Australian Aborigines is 62. 62. And that some of them are even keen to sleeping in the road. And but 62 IQ, 750,000, $40 billion in concessions, and then of course many laws are skewed to benefit them. What am I misunderstanding something here?
And the Aborigines that live out in the outback are really completely dysfunctional. I mean, I don't know whether, you know where Alice Springs is? It's more or less smack dab in the middle of Australia, close to what used to be known as Ayers Rock. And the Aboriginals there are so out of control, they've effectively destroyed Alice Springs. I mean, it's becoming dangerous just to be white or a shop owner in Alice Springs these days. And so it's kind of getting worse in that respect.
Why do you think that the government is so keen to kowtow to these people who obviously are a very small minority of the overall population? They're obviously not contributing much, 62 IQ on average. I mean, I guess I know the answer because I live in America and I see it, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
How would you put it?
I mean, it's a strange phenomenon. I mean, as I say, I mean, I call it the cult of the other. I think it really is a kind of a religious cult.
That's the best way to put it. That is exactly the way to put it.
Yeah. Because
all right. Well, wait.
Anyway,
and you would know about that too because you went to divinity. Well, we'll get to that. I mean, we've talked about this before, but let's go into this. I want to go into a little bit about your background because this is actually a story of It's an inspirational story that I think should be shared, because here you are now. You studied advanced constitutional law at Harvard Law School. You taught American constitutional history at Macquarie University in Sydney, yeah, all the way up to 2005. Now, in July 2005, 2006, all right, but around that time, you received national attention in Australia. If this is all correct, you sent a letter into the local newspaper signed with your academic title in which you claim that importing Sudanese refugees, we haven't even touched on that yet, threatened to turn Australia into, quote, a colony of the third world, and, quote, experience everywhere in the world shows us that expanding the black population is a surefire recipe for increases in crime, violence, and other social problems, end quote. So that is how you burst onto the international stage. You are this Harvard-educated professor. You're teaching at a prestigious university in Sydney, and then you speak the truth, and you're not supposed to do that. What happened then, Drew?
Yeah. Well, essentially, at first, nothing much. I mean, the administration, the vice chancellor happened to be away for a month or so when that story first began. And the deputy vice chancellor just shrugged his shoulders and said, what are you going to do? But when the vice chancellor, this lady, Di Yerbury, came back, she was so shocked and horrified by it all, she immediately suspended me. Without telling me anything about this, I arrived, showed up at a classroom one morning to find the security guards blocking my way into the classroom.
And I have not heard that. Even in all those years that you and I have known each other, I've not heard that part of the story yet. That is something.
Yeah. Well, it was necessary to secure the safety of students, right?
From your ideas, I mean, from your truth.
I guess right, so,
This is how the story continues, the official narrative of it, that, as you mentioned, there wasn't, it was much ado about nothing to begin with. They responded with the normal platitudes, but that they recognized the academic freedom of speech and expression as essential to the conduct of teaching, learning, and research and scholarship. But then this vice chancellor you mentioned, Yerbury, suspended you. But I did not know that armed officers forbade you from accessing your classroom.
That's right. Yeah, and I wasn't allowed to teach again at all until they finally got rid of me in the middle of 2006.
And so this went on a year or two.
It was so, I mean, it was just sitting around doing nothing out there, you know. Again, you have to wonder what thought processes are of a vice chancellor who acts like that, because it just added fuel to the fire, you know.
You told the truth. You told the truth. You told the absolute and incontrovertible truth. You're banned from expressing that truth to your classroom and to anybody who may hear it. And then, but this is what I thought was so heroic of you, is that Macquarie University offered to pay the final year of your contract, but you declined, describing the offer as, quote, a dishonorable discharge. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the end, I decided just to leave, you know. I mean, because what is really the point of just dragging it out?
Well, what in the world is the student? Well, go ahead. No, by all means, go ahead, Drew.
Well, if the idea was to silence me, it backfired in a major, because I was sort of getting... I'd get an interview with a newspaper, and then that would cause a little brush fire, and that would die down. But then I got interviewed by a major TV program. I mean, it just kept going on and on and on, and I managed to get my broadcast my views literally to millions of people, many thousands of whom expressed total support for what I was saying, you know. And it really, to me, demonstrated that there is, like, this wasn't a matter of, let's say, Australian immigration policy, because it, obviously the Australian government is just following in the footsteps of, you know, the American government, the British, the French. I mean, it's all over the Western world. There isn't a single country that I'm aware of in the Western world that's resisting this drive to flood every white country with a third world population. I find that, and the longer this goes on, and the way they're ramping it up, I mean, Canada last year received 1 million immigrants. Australia, 700,000.
Well, that's as much as the so-called Aboriginal population at large.
Yes.
Do the Aboriginal population appreciate that? I mean, you know, they are certainly given so many concessions. Do their opinion matter on that? Yeah. One more segment with Drew Frazier, former professor of constitutional history at Macquarie University in Sydney. He's paid the price. He stood on the firing line, and he never backed down. In fact, he doubled down, and we'll be back right after this with him.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to T-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
Diamond, a denim Bombay. With a slack jaw, not much to say. I said to the man, are you trying to tempt me? Because I come from the land of plenty. And he said, oh, you come from the land of plunder. Yeah. Women low and men plunder.
Four gifts in four different continents all in one night. I don't know if any other program has done that, but this one tonight. Nick Griffin from Europe, the UK, Remy Tremblay in Canada, North America, our friend in Brazil and South America, and now in Australia, Drew Frazier. Four guests, four continents, one night. That's what we do here in March Around the World, and always representing Australia is Drew Frazier, and for good reason.
Drew, I want to continue on because I think it's important. People who have never faced the firing squad, so-called, are always quick with their opinions. Oh, I would do this if I was in that situation, or why didn't they do that? But have you been there? Do you know what it's like? Do you know what you're risking? Do you know what the consequences are? I do. And, Drew, you do as well. And so when it comes to that, I defer to the people who have actually been there. And so in August of 2005, this story reads that more than 300 Macquarie University staff and students attended a forum on racism and free speech at which you, Drew, as well as Sudanese community and university members, were allowed to put forth your views from the floor. You ended up taking a suspension and an early retirement package because, I mean, what else could you do? But you faced it, and you faced it without apology and without regret and without surrender. Did it ever occur to you to try to curry the favor of your overlords and just slink back into acceptability? Or did you always know that this was the only stand you were going to take?
Well, I mean, I had had a lot of experience, really, from the beginning of my academic career of always being sort of an outsider. I mean, I remember when I first started at Macquarie, I'd studied history before I ever went to law school and so on, and I was kind of keen on legal history, and the law school was just starting. So we didn't know what to do in the first year course. And so I proposed to do a history and put together a history and philosophy of law course. Right. And as I say, I mean, in those days, I thought of myself as a kind of an academic Marxist. Okay. But when I put this course together, it just seemed obvious to me that the Western legal tradition was grounded not just in Greek and philosophy and Roman law, but it was Christianity was a huge part of that Western legal tradition. And much to my surprise, and I was surprised, most of my similarly leftist colleagues were really, really annoyed that anybody would be devoting so much time to exploring the influence of Christianity on the Western legal tradition. So that came as a surprise. And I mean, then one thing after another. I mean, I kept having these bruising encounters with the feminists on the law school staff. And so I was used to being kind of an academic pariah by the time that stuff in 2005 rolled around. It was no surprise.
But even after you came under fire, and even after your position was almost determined by the court of public opinion, and you held the line all the way, in September of 2005, which is a couple of months after all of this outcry, which we've been talking about, has come to light, and you're under fire for your position as a professor at Macquarie University, you wrote an article in advocating for the return to the white Australia policy, which if again this is accurate, which is entitled Rethinking the White Australia Policy. Now, this article was set to be published in the Law Journal of Deakin University, which is another prestigious university in Australia, but at the very last minute they decided not to publish it. I wonder why. Rethinking the White Australian Policy has since been published and circulated across the internet. This was something, I think, again, Drew, I mean, you're under fire. Most people would be running for cover. Most people would be trying to crave acceptance back from the establishment, back from the system. And then you double down by writing this piece, Rethinking the White Australian Policy. What was the White Australian Policy?
Well, I mean, as the name suggests, it was a policy of restricting immigration to white people of white European, preferably British stock. But one of the interesting things about that policy was that the British government at this time, back in 1901, the colonial secretary forbade the new Commonwealth government from actually making it explicit in the legislation that only white or British people would be admitted to Australia. So actually, for the length of time that the policy was in place, the immigration department had to use this subterfuge. They gave a dictation test to anybody who wanted to be admitted to Australia at the dock or whatever. And if it looked like they weren't white or were undesirable for some other reason, they would ask them to translate a passage in, Gaelic or Romanian, to see if they knew and to prove their European status and so on. It was a very famous case back, I think, when was it, 1950s, of some actually Czechoslovakian Jewish communist who wanted to be admitted to Australia, and they asked him to translate this passage in Gaelic, and he couldn't, so he was tossed out. And he was white, right?
Sounds good to me.
So,
well, you know, one thing that's so interesting about Drew Frazier is that he took his early retirement. He didn't back down. But then just for fun, Drew, and I could have gone 3 hours with you tonight. We got a minute remaining. You went and got a divinity degree, in which you said was like going to MSNBC at prayer. But you wrote the book Dissident Dispatches, An Alt-Right Guide to Christian Theology in 2017. I met you for the first time that year here in the States, and it doesn't seem like it was that long ago. But you also published The Wasp Question, which I think is your seminal work. I mean, they're all great. Your most recent book, even after Dissident Dispatches, is a fantastic read. But in The Wasp Question, you claim that Anglo-Saxon people in North America, Australia, and elsewhere have failed to defend their ethnic identity and the interest of the postmodern multicultural age, which would seem, I guess, fundamental to listeners of this audience. But the fact that you wrote that after all that you went through there as a university professor, a man of high esteem and prestige, this is an example for the rest of us to follow. I cannot overstate that. You were there, and you didn't bow down when you had something to lose. So many people would have. A minute remaining, Drew, the final word is yours.
Well, I mean, essentially what both of those books are about is the fact that I think we are in a religious war against the globalist plutocratic elite that is pushing another religion, the cult of the other, to promote their own interests by basically having a whole mass of disconnected brown, trans, homosexual people allied with the plutocratic oligarchy to squeeze the Anglo population in every Anglo-Saxon country around the world. That's the situation we're in. And, you know, when you're in a religious war, I guess you do feel as if you have something worth fighting for.
And we do have something worth fighting for, and with people like you at the forefront, we have reason to believe that we can overcome and we can endure. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, Drew Frazier from Australia tonight. One night, four guests, four continents, whether they were appearing with us this evening or in the future, as Drew was. This has been an episode to remember of TPC. And we appreciate you, Drew, for joining us from Australia. Is there hope for our people in Australia? And if so, where do you find it?
Well, I think, yes, there is.
30 seconds.
Okay, yeah. I mean, if there's hope anywhere, it's in Australia.
All right, well, you heard it from the man who has suffered there for our people, and he's saying there is hope for our people, and if it begins anywhere, it begins in Australia. I only wish we had another hour with Drew to dive into that, but for Drew Frazier, Nick Griffin, Remy Tremblay, our friend in South America and Brazil who are was with us tonight, four guests, four continents, one show. I'm James Edwards. We'll continue our march around the world next week from the land down under. I salute you, Drew Frazier, our own Crocodile Dundee. And thank you for the example you set for all of us. And hey, folks, you can follow the example that Drew set. Live life the way he does. And that will treat you to a positive. We'll see you next week. Good night.